This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The world watched with bated breath over the weekend as a military coup unfolded in Turkey against the government of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, only to see that coup attempt fail. President Erdogan, who has faced a mass public opposition for his policies, took to the airwaves to call on the Turkish people to show up in the streets to oppose the coup. Hours later, it was all over, and Erdogan declared the coup over. Now, moving swiftly, his government has begun a massive crackdown on people suspected to be involved in the coup attempt. According to the New York Times, quote, the Interior Ministry fired nearly 9,000 police officers following the arrests of 6,000 military personnel and 103 generals and admirals, and the suspensions of nearly 3,000 judges over the weekend. The coup attempt comes just weeks after a major attack on Istanbul's international airport linked to the Islamic State that left more than 40 people dead. My guest is Rahul Mahajan, a PhD student in sociology at the University of Wisconsin and a news analyst, and the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance and The New Crusade. And he's the U.S. Foreign Policy and Empire correspondent for Rising Up. Welcome back to the program, Rahul.
Great to be with you again, Sonali.
So first, how do you understand what exactly happened over the weekend? It was being described as a military coup because of social media. We were getting these sort of blow-by-blow descriptions of what was happening, although I understand within Turkey, social media had a blackout, a brief blackout. But was it essentially a straight-up military coup?
It was a straight-up military coup in the sense that parts of the military attempted to take over the government. Now, in Turkey, the most recent military coups, this would include the sort of soft coups in 1971 and 1997, and the rather hard coup in 1980, were carried out essentially by the full military. The chain of command was respected. It was a decision made by the chiefs of staff and then carried out by the military. This was not like that. The 1960 coup, which was successful, and this coup were similar in that it was a group of officers who plotted together and turned out whatever troops that they could. In the 60 coup, it was considerably more. In this one, they turned out actually a very small amount of men and material. Their most significant presence was probably within the Air Force.
Now, the U.S. media are reporting a man, an exiled Turkish man by the name of Fethullah Gulen, not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, as the mastermind of the coup. What do you make of this? Who is this person?
So Fethullah Gulen is a combination, what would you call him, a cult leader slash prophet slash religious leader. You know, use whatever terms you like. He has been promulgating a sort of, I guess you would call it, an interpretation of Islam, which he claims is a traditional one. So he's not sort of an overt reformer. Since the 1960s, at least, he has built just a massive empire of, a loose empire of various different kinds of organizations. It starts with education, so schools. There are a large number of Gulenist schools in Turkey. Gulenists are also a major player in the charter school movement in the United States. They have well over 100 charter schools here in this country.
What? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So then you've got, so people came up within that educational system, and then they become all kinds of things. So you've got businesses headed by Gulenists. You've got businesses that are associated. People who go through that whole process become used to giving what they call himmet, which means donations for various causes. So they remain linked with sort of a core Gulenist network. So you've got all these people in various different kinds of positions. Very significant businesses, for example, who may not be part of the core and may not be sort of engaging every day or every week in the kinds of activities that keep people together, but remain connected for life. Then you've got the fact that more and more Gulenists, and this has been going on for quite some time, decades in Turkey, got into the police, the judiciary, and now the claims are, and I think that they're plausible, that they even got a fair number of people in the officer corps. And remember that you've got people fairly high up in the officer corps who were implicated, so colonels and generals, which means that these are people who entered the officer corps quite a long time ago. So the fact that say 3,000 judges have been suspended may sound completely insane to most people, and we can get on the subject of Erdogan in general and his increasing authoritarianism, but it is true that there are thousands of Gulenist judges. Exactly how many, nobody knows. That they heavily infiltrated the police and judiciary, that during in the past 10 to 15 years especially, they actually collaborated with Erdogan and the AKP on, among other things, a massive project to destroy the political power of the old Kemalist secular military and to change the situation, which used to be the case in Turkey, that you had elected civilian governments, but they were restricted within a narrow range, and they had to, when the military really cracked down on them, they had to obey or be replaced. That is no longer the case, and it's because of a sustained effort by both Erdogan, AKP, and the Gulenists together, in which they did things like arrest and imprison large numbers of Kemalist officers on trumped up and utterly ridiculous charges that they were plotting a coup. The biggest thing being the so-called Ergenekon plot, which I think I've talked with you about before.
So let's switch to actually what Erdogan's response has been. Now, as you've said, this is a leader who has been widely unpopular. And it seems as though this coup attempt and the fact that it failed has been exactly what his political life has needed. Not only was he able to successfully mobilize the Turkish public onto the streets to help prevent this coup, but now he's able to purge all of these anti-government forces and has legitimacy to do so because of the coup. In the end, it seems like he's the winner.
Okay, so I actually disagree with the characterization of Erdogan as widely unpopular. Just because he has been authoritarian, paranoid, unstable, and has pretty much gutted most of the elements of Turkish democracy does not mean he's unpopular. In fact, yes, it is true that there are lots of opponents of the regime, but the AKP wins elections regularly with what in the Turkish system are resounding successes. They once actually got over 50% of the total vote, which in a multi-party parliamentary system means total political domination. When he gave his call to people to come out into the streets to oppose tanks, tens of thousands of people came out. The AKP wins elections on a regular basis. They have had as many impressive victories electorally and in terms of constitutional reform as, say, Hugo Chavez and the Chavistas in Venezuela. Again, Chavez was very unpopular and his successor is extremely unpopular, but he had a mass base and so does Erdogan. So I wouldn't characterize him that way. And I would say that it is true that this coup provides an opportunity, as he's clearly said himself, to crack down on everyone. But you know, even before this, he was cracking down. There was very clear sign, for example, that there was an incipient purge of Gulenists going on, and it's probable that insofar as, again, what we know is loose allegations at this point. It's probable that Gulenists in the military got wind of this. Most obviously, when in March he actually closed the Gulenists ran the largest circulation newspaper in Turkey, or at least they were connected with it. There's a lot of strategic ambiguity about what kind of organization is Gulenist, or how much, or how close to the orbit it is. It's rather complicated, but the Erdogan shut down both the largest English language daily in the country and the largest Turkish language daily, and reopened the Turkish daily as basically a government mouthpiece. So he has been doing this even before the coup. It's not like he needed or was looking for an excuse, but obviously now he is going to go all out and there's not going to be much that is likely to stop him.
And just to remind our audience, when you say Gulenists, this is basically named after this person, Fethullah Gulen, who we mentioned earlier in the program, who happens to be based in Pennsylvania, the United States. Well, speaking of the U.S., John Kerry, in response to not just the coup, but specifically to the purges after the coup, has said that Erdogan's actions threaten Turkey's membership in NATO and threaten to sort of fail the democracy test of NATO. What could the larger regional implications of this coup, failed coup attempt be for Turkey and for its foreign policy, for Turkey-US relations?
Well, you know, just, you know, as a side note, the Turkish commander of the Incirlik air base has been taken into custody as a coup plotter. Now, Incirlik, people may not know, probably a lot of people know that it is used as a base for the United States to fly its oh-so-numerous bombing missions in the region by CENTCOM. Incirlik has 50 hydrogen bombs, and they are under the control of local country forces, not of U.S. forces. So one tiny, potential source of instability right there, but the ramifications potentially are almost endless. If Erdogan keeps doubling down on the call that the U.S. has to extradite Gulen or become an enemy of Turkey, that is going to be a problem, because I don't really see politically how Obama can extradite Gulen, because first of all, they have to provide some evidence, right? For extradition, you need not enough evidence to provide a conviction, but enough evidence to actually warrant extradition. And I don't know that they will be able to connect, even if they manage to find evidence against any number of people who are connected to Gulen, to actually trace it back to him. I doubt that will happen. And even if it did, I can't imagine that anyone will certify that they think Gulen will be able to have a fair trial in Turkey. So I don't think the United States is going to do that, and Turkey is going to have to back down, or it will definitely affect the relationship.
So let's talk about whether this is going to have an impact on Turkey's role in the war against the Islamic State. You and I have talked about this quite a bit in the past, and Turkey has been kind of reluctant on the war because it has its own agenda with respect to particularly the Kurdish nationalist movement. Just a few weeks ago, Turkey was the site of and the target of a massive attack on its airport that left more than 40 people dead. Do you see that incident, Turkey's role within the war against Islamic State and this coup, as having any relation?
I think that there's certainly a relationship between Turkey's role in the war in Syria overall and the increasing criticisms of Erdogan from certain political corners of society. Now, with regard to the Gulenists, it's very hard. I mean, it's not like they make a lot of overt political statements. They have exerted their political power mostly by doing things like engaging in massive numbers of illegal wiretaps and actually cameras and video evidence of private individuals, and then releasing transcripts of wiretaps and releasing potentially embarrassing videos to destroy the political careers of people. But it's not clear what exactly they believe. On the other hand, Erdogan is widely criticized for mishandling Syria right from the beginning. It's not so much about the war against Islamic State, though. It's about his support for the Syrian rebels from earlier on, from 2012 in particular, that has really led to that. With regard to the actual, things stepped up. A lot more terrorist attacks started happening in Turkey after Erdogan agreed to let the U.S. forces use Incirlik in the fight against Islamic State. So right now, who knows how that will go. It will probably continue, but everything is very volatile right now. It's certainly not going to be even the priority for the Turkish state that it was. On the other hand, with regard to the Kurdish question, I mean, it's unlikely, but there's at least a possibility that things will get better, because Erdogan previously has as is a tradition of Turkish politicians in power, tried to sort of paint all of his opposition with one broad brush and suggested that Islamic State, PKK, the Kemalists, everyone who opposes him is basically all in cahoots with each other, even to the point of ridiculous claims like suggesting that the terrorist attack which killed 100 HDP, i.e. Kurdish protesters in Ankara, was carried out by the PKK, or letting people talk about how the Atatürk airport attacks might have been carried out by the PKK, which are both of which are just ridiculous claims. They're obviously from Islamic State. But HDP was one of the political parties that got out very early condemning the coup. And let's hope that at least they got some capital with Erdogan for that, and that he will back off a little bit, because that's been, up till now, one of the most destructive things he's been doing, carrying on that crusade rather than trying to unite the country against anything else like the deteriorating security situation.
Well, Rahul, I want to thank you for helping us try to make sense of what is unfolding in Turkey. I'm sure we'll have you back on in case things do change. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Rahul Mahajan is a PhD student in sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a news analyst. He's the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance and the New Crusade. And of course, he is the U.S. Foreign Policy and Empire correspondent for this show. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.